Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
This is WMUC FM, College Park, where college radio is good radio. Got that. And welcome to Blow Up. We are back for another episode. Today's episode, we're going to talk about the grunge movement in the 80s and the 90s that took place in Seattle, Washington. And you may be asking, what is grunge? And the correct answer is that we're going to discuss what the correct answer is, because there's various definitions. I think no one has a correct answer. You ask the median American and they'll all say something different, or of people who are alive during the era. Unless you're like a music nerd, you're not going to have, you know, the correct answer. But we're going to talk about grunge today and where it originated from. And it originated in Seattle, Washington. It got its name from a complaint the musician Mark Arm had about his own band, Mr. Epp and the Calculations, in which he writes, "I hate Mr. Epp and the Calculations. Pure grunge, pure noise, and pure something else that I cannot say on air." And that's where it came from. And that is what, you know, historians mark as the origin. But I think the deeper origin, where it came from, or how the movement proliferated, was through a compilation album known as Deep Six. And it was one of the first releases from a Seattle punk rock record. Because you have to remember, grunge sort of started out because punk became much more sludgier, much more slower in sound in the mid-80s. Like, Black Flag wasn't as triumphant as their earlier releases were around this period in terms of noise. And the grunge scene, specifically Kurt Cobain and the people from the Melvins, they saw Henry Rollins live. It was like, I can make music like this. Like, this is crazy. And so they did. And so CZ Records was a punk-based record, and they released this compilation album known as Deep Six, featuring musicians such as Green River, Malfunction, The Melvins, Skin Yard, Soundgarden, and U-Men. And this is arguably what people mark as that sort of beginning of grunge. And so we're going to play a song by Green River to start this off. This is Swallow My Pride by Green River. Take a listen.
Yeah. she takes me home. I'm bloody and stained without control.
You just listened to Man in the Box by Alice in Chains, Swallow My Pride by Green River, and Jezebel Woman by Malfunction. So you may be wondering, when did grunge become the huge phenomenon that it did in the 90s, in which you couldn't go a single day without going on MTV, which I assume every single person listening to did in the 90s, was alive back then, and had access to a CRT with MTV music videos, and listen to this, listen to the Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit music video every single morning before they went to their first period pre-calculus class. And I think it probably is indebted to that Nirvana, Nevermind, Smells Like Teen Spirit music video. And the thing with that is when Nevermind became as big as it did, that's when the record labels got a hold on the new big thing. They figured they had something great on their hands. They figured that they had something to encapture the youth of America, to make them do violent stuff, and to have their parents claim that they're now satanic for worshiping Kurt Cobain. And they were obviously, they had something really big on their hands, but it didn't really last that long. And sometimes I wonder what, you know, the genre did overall contribute to music history outside of its just cultural relevance. I think of newer albums. I try to think of new musicians inspired by these grunge acts, and it's quite weird. But we're gonna go over the four big grunge acts of the time that the music industry just could not get enough of, and you know it. Quite frankly, I will say that it was Nirvana, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, and Pearl Jam. The funny thing is, I don't know if people who were actually grunge fans back then actually did enjoy Eddie Vedder and his music. I think he was probably a joke at the time, I'm not going to lie. Nowadays, Gen Xers love him. He's like the only one who's alive. So it's like, oh, I guess, you know, we can't have Chris Cornell anymore. We got Eddie Vedder. It's like, okay, we'll take what we can do. No offense to Eddie Vedder. But, yeah, we're going to go over the four big acts. We're going to talk about, you know, their cultural impact and their cultural importance. We're going to start off with Alice in Chains. I go back and forth to whether or not they're actually my favorite ones out of all of them. The most metal, certainly. But I'm going to play this very underrated track off of their album, their self-titled album, Alice in Chains, not Alice in Trains, ooh, imagine if they were trains, called Shaming You. Love this one, that people don't care enough about. So listen to this.
Yeah.
I guess you just cut there a little teaser. But you just listened to Shame on You by Alice in Chains and Interstate Love Song by Stone Temple Pilots. The interesting thing about Stone Temple Pilots is that, you know, most big grunge fans probably don't even consider them as grunge. And that's like the significance of the record labels sort of controlling what grunge is. Kurt Cobain famously hated the word grunge because it was a marketing scheme. It's like if you're a rock band and you're inspired by hard rock of the 70s, that like your dad or your boomer dad would like, then okay, you're easily marketable to people, even if you don't really represent much of anything, right? So it was an all-encompassing, it basically was just Seattle music. It was the Seattle sound, but now anyone could adopt the Seattle sound, and not Stone Temple Pilots, but anyone who wasn't from Seattle is now totally grunge. I recall having a conversation with my brother one time years ago, in which he didn't know what grunge was. So it was like, have you never heard of grunge? And I was like, oh, can you name a grunge band? And my dad in the background said the Smashing Pumpkins. And I just looked at him and was like, okay, they're not a grunge band. You're not right. But also, it's your dad, and he's right no matter what you can do. And you just have to give him, you have to let him pretend that he's right. You really do. Yeah, but that's just what the median person thinks. Just any rock band from that era is grunge because they have guitars, which is interesting to think about. But for our next song, it's going to be Hands All Over by Soundgarden. So take a listen.
Oh,
You just listened to Hands All Over by Soundgarden and Makake by Failure. And, you know, everything's already said that you can basically say about Nirvana. Like, they're culturally impactful in ways that's, you know, hard for me to even describe. Kids are still wearing Nirvana shirts without, you know, actually listening to the band, which if you complain about that, then you are a loser, by the way. Just want to let everyone know. But I think many people mark the end of grunge with being Kurt Cobain's death. And I think Kurt Cobain didn't want this type of, didn't want the band to move in a harsher direction. And that's exemplified by the MTV Unplugged. They were very inspired at the time by R.E.M. They wanted to move in a more poppier art rock direction that honestly probably would have worked, considering that grunge in terms of marketability wasn't as successful as it was in the early 90s. So I'm going to play a song from In Utero that is, you know, more harsh as a juxtaposition to that. So this is Serve the Servants by Nirvana.
Take us a bit of well. Now I'm
You just listened to Serve the Servants by Nirvana, Jennifer's Body by Hole, and Once by Pearl Jam. I'm going to leave you guys with one more song, one of my favorite current songs ever. This by the great Soundgarden, whose lead vocalist Chris Cornell tragically passed away in 2017. This song is called 4th of July, and I love this song because of how it opens. It's so sludgy, it's so metal, and I think it's very underrated. And, or it's probably not even. Maybe that's just, maybe just to me. But yeah, this is 4th of July by Soundgarden. And I will see you guys next week. Make sure to tune in.